by VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. U.S. law enforcement officials say a United States Army veteran who drove a truck into a crowd of New Year's Day revelers had pledged allegiance to ISIS but acted alone in the attack. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Reyes spoke at a press conference Thursday.
We do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar.
Shamsuddin Jabbar was shot dead at the scene after firing at police. The 42-year-old Texan was a U.S. Army veteran who once served in Afghanistan. He posted videos on Facebook on the morning of the attack, in which he said he supported Islamic State, according to the FBI. At least 14 people were killed in the attack. The FBI also said there was no link between the attack and the incident in Las Vegas on the same day, in which a Tesla Cybertruck exploded in flames outside the Trump International Hotel.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Police on Thursday said a highly decorated elite U.S. soldier planned to cause more damage when his rented Tesla Cybertruck exploded outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Officials believe the man in the truck was Matthew Livelsberger,
a Green Beret operations sergeant,
on approved leave from a special forces assignment in Germany.
The individual had sustained a gunshot wound to the head prior to the detonation.
Clark County Sheriff Kevin McMahill says they believe Livelsberger shot himself in the head and the explosion did not cause the intended damage. Seven people suffered minor injuries. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. The 119th U.S. Congress will come into session Friday. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
A new U.S. Congress set to start Friday. But Speaker of the House Mike Johnson's leadership position is in jeopardy after his deal last month with Democrats to keep the government funded and open. Meanwhile, House Democrats have expressed concern about the influence of billionaire Elon Musk after he stalled the government funding bill by posting his concerns about it on social media. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Indian authorities said on Thursday they had completed moving toxic waste from the site of the 1984 Bhopal gas leak disaster, which killed more than 5,000 people. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin reports.
On December 3, 1984, a methyl isocyanate gas leaked from a pesticide factory owned by American firm Union Carbide, poisoning more than 500,000 people. 12 leak-free containers carrying about 370 tons of toxic waste reached a disposal facility on Thursday. Swatantra Kumar Singh, the director of Bhopal Gas Tragedy Relief and Rehabilitation Department, told Reuters. The Madhya Pradesh state government said in a statement that a trial run was done in 2015 to dispose of 11 tons of waste and that it will take 3 to 9 months to incinerate the remaining material. Singh said the trial run conducted by the Federal Pollution Control Agency found emission standards to be in accordance with prescribed national standards and that the process is environmentally safe. But activist Rachna Dingra said the solid waste after incineration would be buried in a landfill and will result in environmental concerns.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin. Researchers in Britain have unearthed nearly 200 dinosaur tracks that date back 166 million years. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The discovery, announced on Thursday by the universities of Oxford and Birmingham, was made last summer when a worker digging up clay in a quarry in Oxfordshire noticed unusual bumps. That finding led to a week-long excavation in June, which unearthed five extensive trackways that form part of a dinosaur highway. Four sets of tracks were made by herbivores called sauropods, which were most likely cetiosaurs. The Cetiosaurus comes from the Middle Jurassic period in what is now Britain and probably France. I'm Charles Villadesma.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
latest from New Orleans.
In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote.
Space junk falling from the sky in Kenya.
It is a part of a space object, which is in form of a ring, a metallic ring.
And a new session of Congress is about to start. But before anything can happen, we need a Speaker of the House.
Now remember, until you elect that Speaker of the House, you can't form the committees, you can't pass any legislation, and importantly, in this time around, you can't certify the election results.
Today is Friday, January 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strope. And I'm Steve Karish. The top story continues to be the terror attack in New Orleans early New Year's Day. In that attack, a man crashed a pickup truck into a crowd of partygoers celebrating the New Year, killing 14. The suspect was later killed in a shootout with police. The suspect, the driver of the truck, has been identified as Shamsuddin Jabbar, a 42-year-old Army veteran from Texas. The FBI said on Thursday he was inspired by the Islamic State terror group, and so far, it appears he acted alone. Investigations continue on motives and possible links to a second vehicle attack on Wednesday, that one in Las Vegas, also driven by a U.S. soldier. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has our story.
Heavy police presence in New Orleans Thursday after a driver slammed past a security blockade into the crowd celebrating the new year. 14 were killed and dozens injured before a police shot and killed the driver. The suspect, Shamsuddin Jabbar, was an Army veteran who served in Afghanistan. Just before the attack, Jabbar posted videos online to proclaim his support for the terror group Islamic State, also known as ISIS, said FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea.
In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer.
IS once imposed a reign of terror in Iraq and Syria before a U.S.-led coalition ended its self-declared caliphate. President Joe Biden met his Homeland Security team Thursday.
We're going to continue to relentlessly pursue ISIS and other terrorist organizations where they are, and they'll find no safe harbor here.
IS has experienced a resurgence worldwide with plots in Russia, Turkey, Iran, and elsewhere. Its branch in Afghanistan, IS Khorasan, claimed responsibility for killing a minister in December, the latest in a string of suicide bombings in the country. IS urged its sympathizers to attack during the holidays. The group leveraged civilian suffering in Gaza to radicalize and recruit, says analyst Clara Brokart with the Soufan Group via Skype.
I think this is a really important aspect. While this is a more recent development, I will also say that the current situation in Syria, where there is some extent of a power vacuum in certain areas of Syria, we'll also see ISIS likely strengthening.
Authorities are also investigating the explosion of a Tesla Cybertruck outside the Trump International Las Vegas Hotel Wednesday. The truck was rented via the same app as the vehicle used in New Orleans. Authorities identified the truck's driver as Matthew Livelsberger, an active U.S. Army Special Operations soldier. The FBI says at this point there is no definitive link between the two attacks. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
In Africa, there's still tension in the air in Chad. The opposition is calling for an immediate end to the country's transitional government and the scrapping of the December 29th general elections, which were largely boycotted by the opposition. Chad's elections management body has pledged to count the votes and declare the results, saying that irregularities cannot influence the outcome. Moki Edwin Kinzeka filed this report from neighboring Cameroon, narrated for us today by Scott Walterman.
The voice of Assani Bayra, Vice President of Chad Iran's National Agency for the Management of Elections, or ANJI. She tells reporters in Chad's capital that vote counting is underway after the Central African state's local, provincial, and parliamentary elections on Sunday. The elections were scheduled to end Chad's three-year transition period following the death of longtime President Idriss Deby Itno in April 2021. The late president's son, Mohamed Idriss Deby, was declared the winner of the presidential election in May. Provisional results for these latest polls are expected by January 15th. Asani said ANJI had successfully executed its mission of ending the transitional period by organizing free, fair, and transparent elections. The elections body says about 36% of Chad's estimated 8.3 million registered voters took part in Sunday's poll. But opposition parties maintained the turnout was much lower, saying that civilians respected opposition calls for a massive boyboycott. Avaksuma Yanja is a spokesman for Chad's Political Actors Coalition Group, or GCAP, a coalition of several dozen political parties. He spoke on Monday during a press conference in the capital. In a statement Monday, Success Masra, president of the Transformers, one of Chad's leading opposition political parties, called for a new transition, which he said should be marked by truth, dialogue, and reconciliation to lay the foundations of a stable, inclusive political system. Masra, who served as prime minister under transitional President Deby, says ongoing tensions in the Central African state may degenerate into violence and social strife. Avaksuma said he is very certain that despite the massive boycott, ANJI will still proclaim Deby's ruling Patriotic Salvation Movement as the winners of the December 29 elections. Ahead of the vote, opposition parties accused Deby of rigging the elections, a charge Deby denies. Yaminge Bethembaya is a political analyst at the University of N'Djamena. He spoke to VOA on Monday via a messaging group. The analyst told VOA that although the opposition has legitimate claims that the boycott was massive and irregularities, including the stuffing of ballot boxes to rig elections for Deby, it is unlikely that the polls will be annulled as the opposition requests. The Chadian government says calls for the elections to be annulled and for a new transition are intended to cause chaos and sink Chad into violence. The government says civilians should not obey opposition calls to destabilize their country by going out on the streets to protest. For Moki Edwin Kinzika in Yaoundé, Cameroon, I'm Scott Walterman, VOA News.
Elsewhere in Africa, a nearly 500-kilogram piece of space debris crashed to the ground in rural Kenya. Reuters' Sierra Lee has that story.
A large metallic object crashed into Kenya's Makuku village on Tuesday. Officials believe it is space junk from a rocket's launch vehicle. The item weighs over 1,000 pounds and measures about 8 feet in diameter. The Kenya Space Agency, or KSA, assessed the debris in the crash site in Makueni County. Here's KSA officer Major Alois Weir.
It is a part of a space object, which is in form of a ring, a metallic ring, possibly from a rocket separation stage.
Officers retrieved fragments from the site for further analysis and to investigate the origin of the fallen object.
We are to assess the impact to the area, identify whose space object it is, so that we can use the existing legal mechanisms under international law, as far as the outer space treaty is concerned, to look and to find a way to first get the person and bring him to the responsibility of his space object.
The KSA said the debris does not pose an immediate threat to safety. There were no casualties and no significant damage was reported. There's growing concern around increased global space activities and the rise of man-made objects in the Earth's orbit. That's led experts and governments to highlight the potential risks associated with space junk, including incidents like this one when debris falls back to Earth.
That's Sierra Lee of Reuters reporting for us. And here are some more stories we're following from around the world.
Authorities sought on Friday to execute an arrest warrant for impeached South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol as a crowd of protesters faced off with police outside his residence and vowed to block any attempt. Reuters video showed cars reportedly carrying the investigative authorities arriving near the presidential residence. Yoon is under criminal investigation for insurrection over his short-lived martial law attempt on December 3rd. An arrest warrant would be unprecedented for an incumbent South Korean president. Officials from the Corruption Investigation Office for High-Ranking Officials, which is leading a joint team of investigators that include the police and prosecutors, had arrived at the gates of Yoon's compound shortly after 7 a.m. local time, according to witnesses.
Shock and dismay prevails in Montenegro after a gunman fatally shot 12 people, including two children, in a western town before killing himself. At least four other people were wounded in the shooting rampage that followed a bar brawl. Police said on Thursday the attacker was later located and surrounded by officers hours after the killing. He died after shooting himself.
Apple has agreed to pay $95 million to settle a lawsuit accusing the company of deploying its virtual assistant Siri to eavesdrop on people using its iPhone and other devices. If the settlement is approved, tens of millions of consumers who owned iPhones and other Apple devices from September of 2014 through the end of last year could file claims. Each consumer could receive up to $20 per Siri-equipped device. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope.
And I'm Steve Karish. Now in U.S. politics, the 119th Congress will come into session on Friday. But after a contentious battle over government funding last month, the Republican Party's seemingly unified control of the Senate, House of Representatives, and presidency faces challenges. VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson, has more.
A new U.S. Congress set to start Friday. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
President Trump will return to D.C. and to the White House, and we will have Republican control of the Senate and the House. Things are going to be very different around here.
But Speaker of the House Mike Johnson's leadership position is in jeopardy after his deal last month with Democrats to keep the government funded and open. Kevin Kosar is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
Mr. Johnson caught a lot of fire from his GOP colleagues, and he has an extraordinarily limited margin for his majority, just a handful of people.
President-elect Donald Trump posted his support for Johnson on social media Monday, saying the speaker was, quote, a good, hardworking, religious man. But Republican Representatives Chip Roy and Thomas Massey have already stated their doubts about his leadership. And Trump ally and advisor Steve Bannon called on Republicans to remove Johnson from leadership.
Clearly, Johnson's not up to the task. He's got to go.
2 years ago, at the start of another Congress, Republican Kevin McCarthy faced similar challenges to his bid for the speakership.
A speaker has not been elected.
He was finally elected on the 15th round of voting. Meanwhile, House Democrats have expressed concern about the influence of billionaire Elon Musk after he stalled the government funding bill by posting his concerns about it on social media. Representative Pramila Jayapal heads the House Progressive Caucus.
Musk has been tweeting out all kinds of lies and misinformation about even what was in the package.
Change is also coming to the U.S. Senate as Republicans take the majority from Democrats and Mitch McConnell steps away from party leadership for the first time in 18 years. John Thune of South Dakota will now be the top Republican.
We have a mandate from the American people. A mandate not only to clean up the mess left by the Biden-Harris-Schumer agenda, but also to deliver on President Trump's priorities.
Traditionally, the first 100 days of a new presidency and Congress are a time for an ambitious legislative agenda. Casey Burgett is a professor at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
He's going to hit tariffs very hard. He's going to focus on the border and executive orders related to immigration and immigrants, particularly from Mexico and Muslim countries. And then he's going to work on any compromises he can to get through the legislative agenda on things affecting the economy, groceries, as he likes to call it.
The U.S. House of Representatives is also scheduled to certify the results of the 2024 election next Monday, confirming Donald Trump won the presidency. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
As we just heard, there's some doubt about Mike Johnson's ability to become Speaker of the House again, at least on the first round of voting. Catherine Gibson is back, and she spoke with Steve about the issues and controversies among Republicans that Johnson will need to overcome to keep the job.
What's interesting to me about the contest for the speakership is that it's not necessarily Republicans versus Democrats. It's really Republicans versus Republicans.
That's great. And that's such an important point that you bring up, is that really the numbers of House Republicans majority is so slim, so small, that Speaker Johnson needs every single vote to become the leader. Now, the problem is he has a handful of Republicans, very conservative, mostly members of the House Freedom Caucus, who just are concerned about some of his leadership decisions. We know from last month's battle over government funding and keeping the government open that some of those very same conservative members were upset. They said that Speaker Johnson was just giving a blank check to unlimited government spending, that he was making deals with Democrats to keep the government open. And they have very serious, very real concerns about the spending in the U.S. government. They want to cut it back. They say that the U.S. should be tightening its belt. So they really want to hold him accountable, and they can because there are such small numbers in that majority.
How large a faction is this? How many people are we talking about?
Well, we'll see the numbers on Friday when they start the vote counting. But right now, the ones who have been most vocal are just two members of Congress, Chip Roy and Thomas Massie. And they are both House Republicans, both conservative Republicans, who have said, look, something has to be done about Speaker Johnson's leadership, and we just don't want to see him in the chair anymore.
Are either of them opposing Johnson for the speakership?
So we don't know yet who they're going to be bringing up. We know from the fight exactly 2 years ago over Kevin McCarthy's leadership, we saw fellow members of the House Freedom Caucus get on the ballot. We saw, you know, some very backbencher conservatives like Byron Donalds get a couple of votes. It's really once these rounds of votes start, anything can happen.
I do find it interesting that, and you can hear it in the way you're talking about them as well, that these two representatives have rather principled opposition to the spending that Johnson has allowed, and yet they're not being seen as selfish obstructionists. They're being seen as principled opposition.
Well, I think it depends on who you would talk to. Is that a lot of you spoke to a lot of House Democrats, as I do, they would say that these members are absolutely being obstructionists. They are impeding the work of the U.S. House. This was a complaint that came up the last time around when Kevin McCarthy was having so much trouble being elected speaker, is that we went through this process for, it was almost a week, when nothing else can be done. Now, remember, until you elect that Speaker of the House, you can't form the committees, you can't pass any legislation, and importantly, in this time around, you can't certify the election results. So until we have that Speaker in place, we can't have the certification of election results that officially makes Donald Trump be certified winner of the election, and then he can move on to be inaugurated on January 20th.
And speaking of the president-elect, he's thrown his support behind Mike Johnson.
That's absolutely right. He's been very vocal about how he likes Mike Johnson. By all accounts, they have a very good working relationship. He took to his social media platform, Truth Social, to say earlier this weekend that he thinks of Johnson as a principled man, a good man, very religious, and, you know, gave his stamp of approval to the two of them working together for the next 2 years.
And that endorsement is not swaying the opposition.
So far, it is not. But we will see. You know, remember, politics is all about deal making. And we saw that last time around when Kevin McCarthy finally secured the speakership. I have no doubt that if this goes into multiple rounds, you will see some similar deal making.
And we're going to leave it there for today. Catherine Gibson covers the Congress for the Voice of America. Catherine, thanks for your time on what is no doubt a very busy afternoon.
Always good to be with you.
2024 was an eventful year for the media in America. Arrests of journalists nearly tripled, even as some reporters held in Russian prisons were released. From the Press Freedom Desk, VOA's Christina Casiedo-Smith has this look back.
A New York police officer pushes back protesters and reporters at a Gaza war protest at Columbia University early this year. The chaotic scene is an example of what experts describe as a challenging year for press freedom in the United States.
We've seen triple the number of journalists arrested versus last year. Last year, there were 14 journalists arrested. This year, more than 40.
The nonpartisan U.S. Press Freedom Tracker recorded 79 assaults on journalists and 30 cases of equipment damage in 2024. Data showed most incidents took place during protest coverage. This past year also brought a first in U.S. history. An elected official was convicted of murdering a journalist.
A Nevada court sentenced former county administrator Robert Telles to 28 years in prison for the murder of Jeff Gurman in 2022.
The Las Vegas Review-Journal reporter had covered misconduct in Telles' office.
For us at the Review-Journal, it was just an overwhelming sense of relief.
The case had earlier led to a Nevada Supreme Court hearing to prevent the journalist's devices from being searched. The court in 2023 ruled in the news outlet's favor.
Although it was an unpublished ruling, they held that Nevada's reporter shield law, which is kind of the gold standard in the United States, very, very strong law, that the protections of the shield law carry on after a journalist's death.
Outside of the U.S., hostile governments targeted American reporters with legal action. After months of being jailed in Russia, Alsu Kurmasheva and Evan Goshkovich, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, were reunited with their families as part of a historic prisoner swap. Kurmasheva, who works for VOA's sister network Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, later described the bleak environment in Russia.
I didn't have access to free and independent news for more than a year. But what I sensed even last summer, summer of 2023, there is this huge amount of uncertainty in Russia right now. The level of fear is the highest probably since Soviet times.
With Kurmasheva and Goshkovich freed from their ordeal, attention turns to Austin Tice, a freelancer held in Syria for over 12 years. Since President Bashar al-Assad's fall this month, the Tice family has been pressing the U.S. government to find Austin and bring him home. He is the last American journalist held abroad. Christina Caicedo-Smith, VOA News.
We heard earlier in the show about the Tesla Cybertruck that caught fire in Las Vegas. Well, Teslas are in the news for another reason today. Alex Cohen of Reuters explains.
Shares of Tesla fell more than 7% Thursday morning after it reported its first decline in annual deliveries. It handed over 1.79 million electric vehicles in 2024, down 1% from 2023 and below the 1% gain predicted by analysts. Incentives failed to boost demand for its aging lineup of models. CEO Elon Musk expected promotions, including zero interest rate financing, to power a slight growth in deliveries in 2024, reduce European subsidies, a shift in the U.S. toward lower-priced hybrid vehicles, and tougher competition from China's BYD have pressured Tesla. In response, Musk pivoted Tesla to self-driving taxis and backed President-elect Donald Trump with millions of dollars in campaign donations in hopes that it could bring regulatory relief for the company. Deliveries in the fourth quarter also dropped. With self-driving technology still years away, analysts have said Tesla will have to rely on cheaper versions of current cars and the Cybertruck to drive sales growth in the near term. The truck, known for its trapezoidal stainless steel exterior, has been showing signs of demand weakness, analysts have said. Tesla's shares surged 62% last year.
Reuters' Alex Cohen reporting. That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.